Good evening. I'm storyteller Otis Gyre, and I ain't your grandfather. From where I'm from, we don't do bedtime stories. And if that's what you were expecting, you're in the wrong place. If it's terrifying tales you're after, well then, I've got just the thing. Get comfortable, settle in, turn off the lights, if you dare. Your night is about to get a whole lot darker. Who needs sleep anyway?
Good evening. You're listening to Scary Stories Told in the Dark. Welcome, dear listeners, to Season 11, Episode 12. I'm your host, Otis Gyre, and in this episode, I'll be performing four tales to terrify you, courtesy of author The Vespers Bell. Tonight, you'll hear tales of VHS viciousness, bus rides of legend, savages of a different color, and experiments of dubious safety. You're listening to the standard edition of tonight's program, which contains the first two spine-tingling stories. If you'd like to show your support and enjoy an extended version of this and other episodes with twice the tear, visit simplyscarypodcast.com and click Patrons in the upper menu to sign up today. Thank you for your support. Now, it's time to take a walk together down the moonlit trail. So, lock your doors, turn your lights down low, settle in. The show's about to begin.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
You can live out your MasterChef dreams when you find a professional on Angie to tackle your dream kitchen remodel. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Retro is a thing again, isn't it? Actually, here's a little secret. Retro is always in style. It's just what we all consider retro at the time. But one of those things that died a slow, painful death decided to come back to life and is now one of those things that's trendy again. And no, I'm not talking about Zombie Disco Dave. I'm talking about VHS tapes. Those magnetic strips of TV glory that still contain a plethora of hidden secrets, as long as they don't twist up in your gears. It's one of those collections of rarities that we dig into today and find some things are supposed to be hidden away from view for a reason. Without further ado, I present to you Can't Stop the Signal. So, you're trying to cash in on this whole analog horror fad. Is that it? the eccentrically dressed yet curmudgeonly old shopkeeper asked, as he disinterestedly pawed through the jumbled collection of off-brand VHS tapes I'd brought for him. I couldn't say that I blamed Mr. Orville Bucklesby one bit for his lack of enthusiasm. If you believed even half of the stories about him, he'd fought Nazi occultists in World War II, traveled the multiverse with a supernatural circus, and regularly rubbed shoulders with a plethora of paranormal beings that allegedly haunted and visited Herowick County. His oddity shop was stocked with a myriad of bizarre items, some of them questionable authenticity, to be sure, but all of them were more interesting than a few humble VHS cartridges. Analog horror? No, it's nothing like that, sir. I was just thinking that there might be people out there who could get better use out of these than I could, and that you would know how to get in touch with those people, I said with a nonchalant shrug. He eyed me suspiciously as he started reading over the labels on the tapes. What's with the cryptic titles, then, he asked. This one's called, And We All Fall Down. They're all like that. You've got Crying Girl in the Woods. It's already too late. Why won't she forgive me? Etc. This one here just says, Pity Us. What's supposed to be on these things? Well, Mr. Bucklesby, I've been given to understand that you're familiar with a type of device referred to as an inglorious retrovision. Is that correct? I asked, hesitantly. Part of me was hoping that he would say no, that he would scoff at the very question, and I could go home and shove the videotapes back in the basement and forget about them. But he didn't. Instead, his expression changed from annoyed to serious, and he eyed the tapes with a renewed sense of cautious interest. You own a retrovision, then, do you, son? He asked, avoiding eye contact with me. No, but my uncle did, I replied. He tinkered around with it and was able to hook up a VCR. Throughout the 80s and 90s, he recorded various signals he'd picked up on it right up until his death. With practically his dying breath, he told me to unhook the VCR and hide it with the tape collection, and I did. Not even a day later, the retrovision was gone, but the tapes were left untouched. I don't know who took it or how they knew about my uncle's death so quickly, but I can only assume they didn't know about the tapes. I was terrified that they'd find out about the modifications and come back for the tapes, but they never did, and they've been in my possession ever since. My uncle told me never to watch the tapes alone, and I was too scared to ever tell anyone else about them, so I've never watched them. I don't know what's on them, but I know the kind of things you can see on a retrovision, so I figured they might be worth something to the right buyer. Your uncle's been dead 20 years or so, then. Why are you only selling them now? Orville asked, arching his eyebrows skeptically. Well, I was pretty much still a kid when he died, and by the time I was old enough to start looking into my uncle's occult connections, I'd largely forgotten about the tapes, I explained. I just recently started poking around in HerowickHollows.net to see if I could find anything that might have anything to do with my uncle, and that's how I found out about this place. You don't say. Hey, maybe I ought to check out an ad on that site, he mused. You didn't happen to notice if Eve, across the street, was running any ads there, did you? I didn't notice any ads at all while I was there, actually, I answered. There's a short forum thread about her, though. The prevailing opinion seems to be that she's not much more than an Instagram psychic. Ha! I have no idea what that means, but I love it, he cackled. Anywho, back to business. You're saying that these tapes are recordings from a retrovision that your uncle made, but other than that, you have no idea what's on them. That's correct, yes, sir. I nodded dutifully. He let out a slight grunt as he pensively weighed the video cassette in his hands. Listen, kid, before I make you an offer, I'm going to have to check at least a few of these to make sure they're legit, he said, nodding to the 13-inch TV-VCR combo he already had waiting on his desk. You okay with me popping this in? I hesitated for a moment. I knew before I came in that he'd need to watch the videos, and I'd been looking forward to finally seeing what was on the tapes myself. But after so many years of avoiding the tapes, I was, perhaps understandably, wary of what would happen when I finally unlocked their secrets. If you think it's safe, then yes, go ahead, I said with a reluctant nod. No need to be so melodramatic. We're still talking about 20 to 40-year-old VSH recordings, Arvel said as he popped a tape that said "Pity Us" into the VCR and pressed play. After a few seconds of static, a grainy and desaturated image of a man in a chair appeared on screen. The chair was cast from rusted steel and starkly utilitarian in design, while the room he was sitting in was bare concrete as far as we could see. The man was completely bald with a drawn and haggard face. His eyes were jaundiced yellow, and his skin was browned like aged paper and hung loosely off of his face as if he had recently lost an enormous amount of weight. His clothes were ragged and woven from some coarse and faded fabric, and I wondered if he was a political prisoner of some kind. He certainly gave off the impression of being an innocent man who'd suffered greatly and unjustly, his eyes begging the viewer for pity. He held his gaze in the camera for a few seconds, looked down at a scrap piece of paper in his hands, and then cleared his throat. It wasn't our fault. He spoke in a hoarse voice that just barely managed to be louder than a whisper. They demanded sacrifice. They demanded obedience. We could not resist. All of our strength of mind and of will and of flesh was sacrificed in their name, and we had become too weak to resist. The need to feed the engines of war has left our world nearly bereft of life, and yet it was an industry that left us starved and impoverished, beaten and maimed, wasted from disease. This is what was demanded of us, that we feed all the world to the signal until there was nothing left, and never dare to take so much as an extra serving of gruel for ourselves. All that was created went to the cause. We sacrificed so much, and we have nothing left to sacrifice anymore. We couldn't have defied them even if we'd wanted to, and all we wanted was respite from our deal. What else could anyone expect or be expected to want? When we were finally no longer of any use, when we had no more to give, they said that it was finally time for us to be rewarded, and that our reward was to be one of transcendence. They said that the signal would help us achieve enlightenment, to help us understand that the ruined world was our reward, that it was better this way, quiet. But it didn't work. The signal twisted them, and it's twisting us, and we can't stop. We hear it now, always, no matter what. And it will take all it can from us until we're nothing but wretched and forlorn, and even then, it will not be sated. The signal will not be stopped. Cannot be stopped. Can you hear it yet? Sure enough, I did. I hadn't noticed it before, but there was some sort of signal playing over the man's speech. It was subtle, easy enough to think nothing of it at first. But now that my attention had been drawn to it, I found it a very unsettling sort of sound. Like a theremin, but not quite. Fluctuating between high and low tones so rapidly, it seemed almost random, but some cadence of a pattern was undeniably present. It wasn't music, though. More like Morse code. Like it was trying to desperately communicate some sort of message that it couldn't risk falling into the wrong hands. Oh, no. No, 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 no. Orville mumbled as he desperately began pressing stop, pause, and eject on the VCR. When the tape continued to play, he knocked the TV to the ground. Before I could ask what the hell had come over him, he picked up his hickory cane and swung it towards the TV to smash it. He never made contact, though. The TV was gone. His shop was gone. Our world was gone.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today. Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Instead, it was just he and I in a desolate, abandoned city. The buildings and the infrastructure were all starkly utilitarian in their design. All gray and hard and cold, just like the chair in the room that the man had been sitting in. Other than Orville and myself, there wasn't a speck of color or living thing in sight. There was no ambient noise at all. The air was still and yet smelled of an oncoming storm, and the lumpy clouds overhead were so motionless, I wouldn't have been surprised to learn I was looking at a painted ceiling. Son of a bitch! Orville screamed in frustration as he dropped to his knees, striking at the empty space where the TV had been. I, on the other hand, just stood there in stupefaction, stupefied silence. I'd never been translocated before, and my brain was struggling to comprehend what had just happened. Of course, that's what PDS meant. So stupid. Orville cursed himself. Orville, what are you talking about? What's happening? Where are we? I managed to ask. He let out a long sigh before turning to me and looking at me with a dismal expression. The realm of the forlorn, he replied grimly. It's a world ravaged by years and decades of escalating psychotronic warfare until there was nobody left to fight. That was a psychotronic signal you heard. And once it was deep enough into our brains, it pulled us into this reality. Your uncle must have come across it on the retrovision, like someone stepping on an old landmine. I stared at him incredulously for a moment, trying to decide whether or not I believed him. The otherworldly hue of the gray light falling on the empty, brutalist buildings all around us pushed me toward the former. You really have visited other realities before, haven't you? I murmured softly as I tried to remember all those crazy stories I'd read about him. Let's just say I've had some on-the-job experience in a few exotic locales, he said as he pushed himself back onto his feet. Listen up. The most important thing right now is for you to stay calm and do exactly what I tell you. The psychotronic weapons the governments of this world use to torture their enemies and subjugate their own citizens penetrate deeper and deeper until the very fabric of their reality started to unravel. That's why the signal can leak out into other realities. It's how we got pulled in. It's also how we can get back. We need to find the weak spot we fell through and use it to cross back over before we're no longer compatible with our own reality. What the hell does that mean? I demanded. It's not a productive area of conversation at the moment, is what that means. Orville snapped back. Give me your phone, now. Exasperated, I reached into my pocket and grabbed it, checking the signal strength before handing it over to him. I got no bars, no Wi-Fi, nothing, I explained. That won't matter who I'm calling, he said. snatching it out of my hand. I swear the number he punched into it was just the number 7-11 times over. But despite that, in the absence of anything resembling a cellular network, I heard the phone start to ring. "Come on, Gary, don't put me on hold. Oh, and kid, keep quiet. We don't want to attract any attention to ourselves." "Me? You're the one who cursed bloody murder and assaulted the ground the instant we got here," I reminded him. For a second, he looked like he was going to backtalk me, but then I saw his face twist into a terrified grimace as he realized I was right. "Oh, no," he murmured as he began darting his head around in every direction. I didn't know what he was looking for, but I started looking around too, thinking that whatever it was, I'd probably know it when I saw it. Sure enough, I did. Another person had appeared in the distance and was slowly making their way towards us. If I was judging the distance right, the person looked to be about 7 feet tall. They were covered, head and toe, a coarse gray fabric without any exposed skin at all, their face and head covered by a veil and pointed hood. Their gait was shuffling, and their head hung low, and I wasn't even sure they were aware of us. "Orville, do you see?" I started whispering. "Chase it," he shouted, sprinting off toward one of the nearby buildings. There was a mortal fear and desperate urgency in his voice that strongly suggested that I should obey without question, but instead my gaze was drawn back to the being slowly making its way toward me. The body language and the way it was moving made it seem like it might be hurt or otherwise be in need of assistance, generating just enough pity in me to stave off my sense of self-preservation for the moment. Hello? Hello? Are you all right?" I called out cautiously, slowly raising my hand in greeting. The being tossed back their head and let out an ear-splitting wail. It wasn't an aggressive or predatory call, but a forlorn and heart-wrenching sob of abject misery. I reflectively slammed my hands over my ears, but as much as the wail pained and terrified me, I still couldn't will myself to abandon this creature. I almost felt like I was looking at the survivor of a nuclear bomb or something. They weren't a monster, but instead had been disfigured by something monstrous. I even began to weep. I felt such genuine empathy for this person, who had once surely not been so very different from me. But then their wails were joined by a chorus of equally tortured howls from all around us, and more of the strange beings began slowly shambling towards me. And that, thankfully, was enough to finally get my fight-or-flight response into full gear, and I dashed into the building Orville had disappeared into. "Orville!" I shouted desperately, searching for any sign of him. He didn't reply, but he had left a clear path in the dust and debris that littered the floor of the long abandoned and deteriorated building. I raced toward the stairwell he'd used, but the wailing around me became so intense, I stumbled to the ground and clutched my head out of sheer agony. They were in the building now, the forlorn, and their wretched voices echoed off the hard concrete and seemed to be amplified 100-fold. Worse than the volume, though, was that I could make out whispered voices amidst the wailing. "Can you hear it? Signal and a noise? It calls to all. It is subtle, but it is relentless. It must be heard, and bit by bit, it remakes the world until it's omnipresent and unignorable. It took every sense but sound from us. It's in our ears and in our heads, in our voices and in our footsteps, in the rustling of our rags and the creaking of our bones. It's our very own heartbeat. It's every sound we hear and every sound we make. It's everything to us now. It cannot be ignored or denied. It demands service. It demands sacrifice. And we have sacrificed everything that could not be of service to it. We've sacrificed so much, suffered so much, and yet the signal will never be sated. So long as we can serve it, we must suffer. It will never release us. It is louder than us now. Can you even hear us? If you can, then please, please, pity us. I forced myself to look up and saw several of them standing before me, scuttling towards me as quickly as they could manage. One of them screamed louder than the others, the silhouette of a gaunt and gaping face faintly visible beneath its veil. I watched as it slowly outstretched a trembling arm towards me. It was begging for help. They all were. I was sure of it. They'd been suffering in this place for so long, and were so desperate, they just gravitated toward any possible hope of salvation. How could they not? How could I deny them that? Slowly, reluctantly, and almost forcibly, I reached out toward the creature. The instant before our hands touched, I heard a hoarse battle cry ring out from behind me and saw a wooden cane strike the creature across the skull, knocking it to the floor. Orville had come back for me. "Jeez, it means move, kid," he shouted, grabbing my arm and pulling me up the stairwell. The forlorn plodded up the stairs after us, but their clumsy gaits were unable to match our speed. I imagine that it wasn't of much concern to them, though. Where were we supposed to go, after all? I was just about to voice that concern when I saw that the doorway Orville was pulling me towards was filled with a softly glowing white fog. "What is..." "No time!" Orville cut me off before I could even finish asking. Now, I obviously didn't have a lot of time to analyze the situation in any real detail, but with the benefit of hindsight, I can safely say that at that moment, letting Orville drag me through what I could only presume was a portal to God knows where was a slightly less risky option than remaining in the realm of the forlorn, but only slightly. I didn't resist or try to escape, but I did scream as I was pulled through the doorway. Once we were over the threshold, the fog seemed to block all of the noise coming from the other side. There was music, though, I think. Cheerful music that definitely wasn't coming from the realm of the forlorn, but it didn't last long enough for me to tell what it was. Orville and I came running out of the other side, and the white light that had been so bright that all I could see were spots at first. Crashed into a wall, but I heard Orville slam a door shut and shout something into my phone. By the time my vision cleared enough to see again, I realized we were back in Orville's shop. Orville was sitting with his back up against the door, but there was no longer any sign of glowing white fog on the other side. Orville looked exhausted but relieved. How did I stammered. "Called in a favor from an old friend," he said, holding up my phone. I heard a man on the other end say something unintelligible, and Orville raised the phone to his ear. "No, I don't owe you a favor. I called in a favor. You guys still owe me from last April." "No, she didn't pay me for those, Gary. Scrip isn't real money." "No, if I can't pay my taxes with it, it's not real money." "Well, now you're just opening up a whole can of worms about how all value is ultimately arbitrary. We'll talk about this later. Goodbye, and thank you." He pressed end call and deleted the call from my phone's history before handing it back to me. I'm only going to say three more words about what just happened. "Don't pity them," he said gruffly as he rose to his feet and ambled back to his desk. The VCR-TV combo was still face up on the floor, but the VHS tape was sticking out of it. Orville bent down and disdainfully pulled it out, tossed it back in the box for the others. "So, what will you take for the whole kit and caboodle?" I got out of there immediately, leaving my box of VHS tapes with Orville, without taking so much as a cent from him. He mailed me a check, though, oddly enough. But I haven't opened it. I'm just glad to be rid of those tapes after what happened. I wonder how my uncle was able to avoid getting pulled into the realm of Forlorn, or if he didn't, how he got back. He did tell me never to watch the tapes alone, so maybe he had a partner or something in case something like that happened. Maybe the answers are on more of the tapes, but if they are, I'm not brave enough to find them. One near-fatal reality slip is enough for me. Thank you very much. As terrifying as the entire ordeal was, I don't blame the Forlorn one bit. Whether they actually thought I could help them or if they were just obeying the signal, I don't blame them. I was only under the influence of the signal for less than 20 minutes, and I still nearly gave into it. If it hadn't had been for Orville, just the sheer good fortune of having watched that tape with someone who knew how to get back home, the fate of the Forlorn would have been mine as well. They're innocent victims of the signal, and there's no way for me or anyone else to help them, despite the fact they tried to trap me there with them. And despite what Orville said, I do pity them. I hope you enjoyed Can't Stop the Signal by the Vistors Bell, as performed by yours truly. If you enjoyed that tale and would love to read more from tonight's very talented feature author, you can help support him by visiting simplyscarypodcast.com/authors/The Vespers Bell. That's simplyscarypodcast.com/authors/The Vespers Bell. Be sure to visit on Reddit at r/The Vespers Bell. And at Amazon on Kindle-Store-Vespers-Bell. All of tonight's stories are featured on his Volume 3 of the Heroic Chronicles, due out this fall. And if you're hungry for more, please check into his two horror anthologies as well as his sci-fi novella, Madness is Like Gravity. If you do decide to stop by the profile, please leave the Vespers Bell a kind word and let him know you heard about him here on this show and that me, Otis Gyre, sent you. It would mean a lot to me. Thanks again for your support of this program and of tonight's featured author. Just a reminder, always be careful to check your VHS tapes before popping them into an old VCR willy-nilly. Thankfully, I only own one tape anymore. How to get ahead in the meat markets. And, well, let's just say, I won't be getting sucked into that anytime soon. But if you think you can escape the horror by venturing out of your house and staying away from old electronics, think again, my friend. For we have a tale of the horrors of public transportation. And I don't mean who was last sitting in your seat and left that stain behind. No, this is about a bus and a ride that one won't soon forget. Without further ado, I present to you the bus ride down Fowlcroft Road.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take. Whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now, all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
You can live out your MasterChef dreams when you find a professional on Angie to tackle your dream kitchen remodel. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It was just after dark, and I was standing by myself at an abandoned bus stop on an almost equally abandoned street, waiting in near pitch-black conditions for a bus that logically would never come. Most of the streetlights didn't work anymore, and the derelict industrial buildings now housed nothing but the desperate and the depraved. The only points of light that reached my eyes from wholesome windows or bustling vehicles seemed a world away. I was terrified that any moment some creep would come slinking out of the shadows to do unthinkable things to me. But I resisted the urge to flee back to the relative safety of downtown. Just a little bit longer, and I would know if the Fallcroft bus route was real. For longer than anyone cared to remember, people in my city have claimed to see an old bus puttering along the streets of the industrial district at night, traveling a route that's been discontinued for decades, and after all the other buses have stopped running. Sombremore is not that big of a city. It only has 7 bus routes, none of them run after 10 p.m., and none of them got any closer to the industrial district than Alchemy Street anymore. An occasional sighting of a bus out after hours and off-road wouldn't be all that weird, but it's always in the same area, and its marquee reads Route 9, Fallcroft/Fable. Allegedly, anyway. No one's ever been able to get a clear enough photo of it for its marquee to be legible. There used to be a street called Faircroft when people actually lived in the industrial district. But as manufacturing jobs dried up or became automated, Faircroft was left to fester until people started calling it Fallcroft. Eventually it was demolished, and that whole section of land became part of Avalon Cemetery. People who claim they've seen the Fallcroft bus say it drives straight under an overpass toward where Faircroft used to be, then vanishes. Aside from only showing up after hours, there doesn't seem to be any real pattern in when the Fallcroft bus appears. Months, even years, can pass between sightings. It wouldn't actually have been that intriguing of an urban legend to me, if not for one final detail. The passengers. At least several people have claimed that the Fallcroft bus not only carries passengers, but also accepts and discharges them at abandoned bus stops. Since it only runs at night, no one's ever gotten a good look at them. So I decided that I was going to be the first. The idea occurred to me when I was busy buying bus tickets at an automated kiosk. This may or may not be relevant, but they're all made by a local company named Thorntech that owns property in the industrial district. I don't know if it was a glitch or something more sinister, but when the kiosk recognized me, I got a pop-up saying I was pre-approved for an exclusive bus route and asked if I wanted to buy a ticket. I almost clicked no, thinking it was nothing but spam, but the idea of an exclusive bus route piqued my curiosity. I would have liked more information, of course, but the kiosk refused to provide any. My only options were to buy or not buy. So I clicked buy, hoping I wouldn't be debited some ungodly amount. The pop-up vanished, and I heard the ticket dispenser start whirring as it printed out the little hexagonal QR code voucher that Avalon Transit Commission uses. With a quick yank, I ripped it off and held it up to see what the hell I'd just bought. The ticket read, adult single, no charge, limited time promotion. Redeemable only at Stop A, Route 9, Falcroft / Fable, 10 p.m. to 3 a.m. ad arbitrium. Ticket is non-transferable. I was flabbergasted. The kiosk had, completely at random, given me a ticket for the Falcroft bus. I figured it had to be a prank or a publicity stunt or something. I immediately started playing around on the kiosk to try to find out more, but there was nothing else about Falcroft or an exclusive bus route. Looking it up online didn't yield any results either, so that left just one option. And that's why I was standing alone at an abandoned bus stop on the wrong side of the tracks at 10 o'clock at night. Ad arbitrarium means at will or at your pleasure. I had to assume that meant the will of the ticket holder, since I didn't see how anyone could catch a ride that only came when it felt like it. There was no expiry date on the ticket, nor any date at all, for that matter. But for all I knew, that information was in the QR code, so I decided to use it immediately rather than risk it becoming invalid. I promised myself that I was only going to do this once. If the bus didn't come, then it was just a dumb joke, and I was an idiot for falling for it. It could have been worse than a joke, of course, I realized that. It could have been a trap to lure me out into the middle of nowhere and sell me to human traffickers or something. I really should have just torn up that ticket and forgotten all about it. But I knew if I did, a little voice in my head would always have wondered, what if it had been for real? That was the thought racing through my mind when I saw a bus turn the corner and start heading in my direction. There was nothing unusual about it at first, just one of those bright blue electric buses that the city had been making a big fuss about rolling out to keep on target for their carbon neutral goals. I was a little disappointed, as I'd expected a phantom bus to be a little more antiquated. I glanced up at its marquee, certain that it would say only, out of service. Instead, it said Route 9, Falcroft / Fable. Ominously, it began slowing down and pulling over toward the bus stop. I fought off an instinct to flee, and instead held my ground with my ticket in hand. It rolled to a gentle stop with its front door precisely aligned with me, a pneumatic, snake-like hiss escaping as they folded open. Sitting in the driver's seat was an older black man with closely cropped white hair and thin glasses. He looked friendly and professional enough, wearing the same royal blue tie and sweater vest combo I'd seen other bus drivers wearing before. But considering how few bus drivers we had, it was a little concerning that I didn't recognize him. "Evening," he greeted with a smile and a nod. I nodded back, taking a tentative step on board. I started to move the ticket toward the scanner, but then hesitated. "Where's the end of the line?" I asked. "Fable Street, just like it says on the sign. I'll get you there, don't worry. The trip might get a little bumpy, but I'll get you there," he assured me. Nodding my gratitude, I scanned the ticket and the doors snapped shut behind me. The driver was already taking the bus back out onto the road before I even sat down, apparently in a hurry to get underway. I peered at my reflection in the window, struggling to see anything past it, and wondering if there was anyone outside watching me ride away in the mythical Falcroft bus. I took a good look around the inside to confirm if I was truly the only passenger on the bus, and it seemed like I was. Nothing inside seemed to be out of the ordinary, either. I leaned out of my seat a bit to see where we were going and saw that the driver was taking us straight to the overpass where other witnesses had alleged the bus vanished into thin air. With a nervous swallow, I grabbed the nearest rod and braced myself for whatever was about to come. The driver glanced into his rearview mirror and seemed to notice my apprehension. "Seat belts, everyone," he quoted with a reassuring smile just as we entered the overpass. Have you ever driven under an overpass in pouring rain, and for a fleeting instant the downpour vanishes, and you're immersed in a sudden and disorienting silence? That's what it felt like going under that overpass. The lights flickered in the space between light and dark. The outside world was swapped for a surreal landscape of 100-meter-tall dead trees with pale, peeling bark and naked branches. There were no leaves to be seen at all, either in the canopy or on the forest floor. The barren ground was a charred black, and even the fungi blooming out of the dead wood looked to be crumbling into dust. Everything outside the bus looked to be dead. The unpainted asphalt road was in a severe state of disrepair, also. I looked up to see if I could steal a glance at the sky through the dense skeletal branches, but what bare patches I could see were only a sullen gray. "Beautiful desolation, isn't it?" the driver asked, slowing down to accommodate the winding forest road we now found ourselves on. "Yeah, it really is," I said softly. "Not what I expected, though. I read that Faircroft Row used to be housing for factory workers back in the day." "Housing? That's a generous term. Slums, more like it. Those places were falling apart before they were even abandoned." The driver commented, "You know who their original landlord was?" "The official Sombermore website says that Faircroft Row was donated to the city by Crow, Crowley, and Chamberlain, that old bank on Druid Street," I replied. "It says it was generously donated, which, if you ask me, is a sickeningly psychopathic choice of words for trading in an eyesore and class action lawsuit waiting to happen for a tax write-off and getting the city council off your back." The driver retorted, "But they weren't the original owners, though. Chamberlain's many things, but he's not a slumlord. He evicted the whole street the instant he repossessed it. Or his grandfather did, if that's the sorry-ass excuse that immortal son of a bitch is peddling these days. No, Faircroft Row was originally owned by its namesake, Felix Faircroft. You may not have heard of him. He's not as prominent in local folklore as, say, Seneca Chamberlain or Thaddeus Vaughan, but he used to own a good deal of property around town. He fancied himself a gentleman adventurer of sorts and went off on over a dozen expeditions to exotic parts over the years. It was those expeditions, not to mention his cavalier attitude regarding his own investments, that caused his fortune to dwindle and his properties to deteriorate. He was a proud man, though, and didn't take it kindly when he got wind that people were calling the place Faircroft Row." "So you're saying he's responsible for this place?" I asked, confused, turning my head toward the window, just in time to catch a glimpse of a silhouette ducking behind one of the distant trees. "There's something out there."
Yeah, there is," he said with a tinge of melancholy to his voice. "Back to Felix. He'd originally used the land right between the cemetery and the industrial district as a slum because it was the cheapest real estate. When his fortune started taking a turn for the worst, he realized this represented an opportunity of sorts. He hobnobbed with Chamberlain and his buddies enough to know that they were into some occult shenanigans, some of which they used Avalon Cemetery for. Morgana King, the witch who's supposed to have founded the town, is buried out there, or some nonsense like that. I don't know. But Felix, he got into his head that he'd like to expand Faircroft Row further out into the cemetery. The opposite of what ended up happening, ironically enough. His thinking was that if the richest men in town wanted it kept intact, if he just went through the rigmarole of making it look like he was serious about buying some of the cemetery from the city, then Chamberlain would simply make him a counteroffer. Fairly naive of him in retrospect. As he spoke, more of the silhouettes started peeking out from behind the trees. They were still distant, so I couldn't make them out in much detail, but they looked like shrouded humanoid forms composed of deep purple storm clouds. The only feature I could make out was a pair of pure white eyes blinking furiously at the bus as we drove by. I took out my phone to try to take a video of them, but found that either the battery was dead or the phone was broken altogether. No flash photography, please. Wouldn't want to spook them. The driver tried it playfully. So, Felix goes to the city council with his proposal of buying some of Avalon's cemetery to expand Faircroft Row, making sure to offer just enough money that they can't just turn him down on the spot. They hem and haw a bit, saying that they'll need to survey the area, investigate what sort of impact it'll have on the community, that kind of thing, but they'll get back to him. What they actually do is run straight to Chamberlain to see how he'd like to have the matter dealt with. Being the vindictive and conniving little weasel that he is, he pretends to go along with the idea. He invites Felix to meet with him one evening so that they can discuss exactly what parts of the cemetery get sold and how Felix will develop it. Felix didn't suspect a thing and still seemed to think that if he could sell Chamberlain on the idea even harder, then he could take Faircroft Row off his hands altogether and do it himself. They were getting closer now. The forms lurking behind the trees. They're on either side of the road, both ahead of us and behind. The nearer they got, the more likely they were to duck behind a tree the instant I looked directly at them. They appeared to be becoming more emboldened, however, and it felt like their numbers had risen exponentially. A few moments ago, there'd been just one, but now it seemed like nearly every other tree hid one of the strange beings. I became aware of a soft, rapid whispering sound, and I realized it must have been the creatures conversing with one another in their native tongue. Are we in danger? I asked the bus driver as I shifted my gaze between the bus's doors, wondering if they're strong enough to keep the things out. Danger or no, I'm going to finish my story, he replied adamantly. When Felix gets to the cemetery, he finds that Chamberlain's had a brand new mausoleum built right on the border between the graveyard and Faircroft Row. Enraged and bewildered, he demands to know the meaning of it. Chamberlain assures him that all will be made clear once he steps inside. Seeing no harm in humoring him, Felix obliges. That's technically the last anyone ever saw of him. So the story gets a bit more anecdotal. Third-hand accounts of people who heard it from Chamberlain, that sort of thing. Chamberlain leads Felix into the mausoleum and tells him that while he's all for his idea of expanding the occupancy of the cemetery, he's not a big fan of the current impoverished residents of Faircroft Row. Not to worry, though, as he has an alternative demographic already lined up. As dark as it was in that mausoleum, Felix was just able to make out the white eyes staring back at him. I screamed as the creatures rushed out of the forest en masse and threw themselves up against the windows, peering in from both sides with ravenous eyes. Still couldn't make out any other facial features, but I could see a faint outline delineating their heads from their hoods. The wind had picked up and the dead trees started creaking and cracking in its gusts. One broke in half and fell in front of us, blocking our path. "What are they?" I screamed, frantically searching for anything I could possibly use as a weapon against such a massive and ethereal horde. The driver put the bus into park and folded his hands into his lap, apparently resigned to our fate. "It's all right. Really, it is." He tried to assuage me. "They're remnants, or at least that's what I like to call them. This whole place is a remnant of a world that's just been slowly fading away. It would probably have faded into nothing already if it weren't for Chamberlain. He used Felix as a sacrifice to pair this world with ours, stabilizing its decay. Don't ask me what he got out of it, but rest assured, he didn't do it out of pure benevolence. At first, this created an issue with the remnants occasionally phasing over into the immediate area at night. Problem Chamberlain solved by seizing all of Felix's assets and donating Faircroft Road to the city council to merge with Avalon. The cemetery is closed at night, and an occasional ghost sighting in the cemetery is nothing to worry about. This road we're on now needs to be traveled, now and then by someone from our world, to help maintain the connection and keep this world from fading away. Same damn tree tries to block the path every time, though. It's pretty heavy for an old man to move on his own. My eyes went wide with horror as I saw him methodically place his hand on the door lever. "What are you doing?" I demanded. "They're not going to hurt us. They want us to make it through. Otherwise, they risk their world fading again," the driver explained. "They're just here to protect us from environmental hazards, let's say. And yeah, they're probably a bit curious, too. If you want, you can open a window and you'll see they're harmless. But we have to go out there and move that trunk before the weather gets even worse." I looked out at the dozens of remnants surrounding the bus and hundreds, if not thousands, in the forest just beyond. They were definitely inquisitive, but nothing they were doing was explicitly hostile. They had enough numbers that they could easily overturn the bus if they wanted to. I really had no reason to believe or disbelieve the bus driver's explanation for what was happening, but he was right that the fallen trunk needed to be moved if we wanted to get out of there. Reluctantly, I reached for the nearest window and slowly pulled it open. The remnants nearest to the window winced at the sudden movement, taking a step back in surprise. The frenzied whispers to one another were still utterly unintelligible to me, but at the very least, they carried some connotation of wary excitement. One of them was brave enough to take a step back towards me, gently reaching up its nebulous hand in a gesture of congeniality. Hesitantly, I reached my hand out of the window and placed my palm against its. It went right through, my hand feeling nothing but heaviness and static electricity. The remnant's eyes turned to smiling half-moons, while the rest of its kind gibbered hurriedly amongst themselves. My head reflexively whipped around sharply at sound of the bus door opening. "Let's get to it, then," the driver said, as his tired, arthritic legs carried him slowly down the short staircase. Taking one last cautious glance at the horde of remnants waiting outside, I chased after him. The remnants cleared a path for the driver as he hobbled toward the fallen tree. Unsure if they would extend the same courtesy to me, I made sure to stay close to him. The remnant, with smiling eyes, came the closest to us and seemed to be watching us with the greatest of interest. "Don't wander off the road, and especially don't lose sight of it," he warned me. "These woods are disorienting, and if you lose the road, the odds are slim you'll find it again." What was this place? What were these people, I asked, gawking at the desolate world around me in a mix of pity, confusion, and terror. "Don't know what they were, just what they are, and that's in need of our help. he replied as he came to a stop by the tree trunk. Don't try to lift it, just roll it enough for us to get by. Bending down with him, I helped roll the tree over, letting out a gasp of shock when I saw a startlingly human-like face, twisted in rage and agony, emerging from its decaying bark. Is that? I began to ask. Felix? Yeah. A bit of him's in everything here now, but for some reason, this tree, in particular, is easiest for him to topple over, the driver replied. Don't pay him any mind. He's not too happy about having to be the one to keep this world from fading away. But the cost of his freedom would mean letting everyone else here perish. He nodded toward the hordes of remnants, who were now all staring at me in anxious anticipation, waiting to see what I'd do. Pausing for only a moment, I bent back down and resumed pushing the tree off the road as its face grew more and more grotesque and outraged with each roll. When the road was clear, I helped the driver hobble back onto the bus, and we were off. The horde of remnants escorted us the rest of the way, but now their overall mood seemed much more jubilant. The wind howled and the trees groaned under the strain, but no more of them succeeded in blocking our path. Before long, I spotted another overpass up ahead, the first man-made structure other than the road that I'd seen in this place. Remnants all fell behind us now, the one with smiling eyes leading the way and waving goodbye. Not wanting to be rude, I gave a little wave back. When we went under the overpass, the lights flickered again, and when they came back on, we were in Sombermory, somewhere between downtown and the suburbs. Here we are, Fox on Fable, last stop. The bus driver announced as he pulled up to the bus stop, looking up into the rearview mirror and giving me an appreciative smile. Thanks for your help. First time doesn't always go this smoothly. Do you know why I was offered the ticket? I asked, holding it up in the air for him to see. I don't. I'm just the bus driver, he said with a shake of his head. I don't know who assigns the tickets or what their reasoning is. Just that I need at least one passenger with me. That passenger's yet to let me down. He reached into his pocket, pulling out a small blue and white card. Here you are. One commissary bus pass for your trouble, he said with some embarrassment. I know it's not much, but I appreciate the help. If you ever want to go on another ride down Falcroft Row, just wait at the defunct bus stop after hours with that card and I'll be there. Things go easier for me when my passenger already knows what's going on and the remnants seem better-natured too. Can't offer you much in return other than what else I know. I bit my lip nervously for a moment before gingerly accepting the bus pass. I'll think about it, was my non-committal response. The driver nodded, understandably, opening the door to let me off. As the bus drove away, I noted that its marquee now read, out of service, and there was nothing to distinguish it from any other bus in the fleet. I reached for my phone and found that not only was it working, but that the time was only a little past 10, as if the ride through the remnant realm had barely taken any time at all. I was relieved at first. That revelation gave me an uneasy feeling that took a moment to coalesce into a conscious thought. If my short bus ride in the remnant realm had counted for nothing in my reality, then how long had Felix's imprisonment, which had lasted over a century on the outside, felt like to him? I hope you enjoyed the bus ride down Falcroft Row by the Vespers Bell, as performed by yours truly. If you've enjoyed what you've heard tonight, I'd like to remind you one last time that tonight's featured authors can be found by visiting our website. Just visit simplyscarypodcast.com/authors/thevesperspell.
That's simplyscarypodcast.com/authors/THE-VESPERS-BELL. Other works by him can be found on Reddit at r/TheVespersBell and on Amazon at Kindle-Store-Vespers-Bell. His creations, the Star Sirens, can be found in the novella Madness is Like Gravity, and Tales You've Heard This Evening, among others, can be found in his upcoming Heroic Chronicles Volume 3, due out this fall. If you do decide to stop by the profile, please leave a kind word and let him know you heard about him here on this show and that me, Otis Gyre, sends you. It would mean a lot to me. Thanks again for your support of this program and of our featured author. As a reminder, if you decide to give tonight's talented author's stories a read, please consider leaving him a quality review and a kind word, or a thoughtful public comment and an upvote. Be sure to let him know you heard about him here on this program and that Otis sent you. It means more to me than you can imagine, and I'm sure that it would be much appreciated. Thanks again for your support of this show and of tonight's featured author. Now, before we go, I'd also like to take a moment to thank you personally for joining me for this episode of Scary Stories Told in the Dark. If you enjoyed what you've heard on today's program, please take a moment to stop by our iTunes page or wherever else you listen to your favorite podcasts and leave us a 5-star review and a kind word. It makes a huge difference and would mean a lot to us. If you'd like to hear a premium, extended edition of tonight's program and all of our other episodes featuring Twice the Terror, visit simplyscarypodcast.com today and click the Patrons link in the menu at the top of the screen. You'll find yourself at chillingtalesfordarknights.com, where you can purchase season passes for this podcast and our other quality storytelling programs, or become a patron for as little as $5 per month. Get access to our entire audio archive dating back to 2012, all of it ad-free. If you happen to use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, follow and subscribe to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights there, where you'll get all of our latest updates and new releases and have the chance to interact with us each and every week. You can subscribe to me on YouTube as well at the Otis Gyre channel, where you'll find releases of my series, Horror Storytime, dating back to 2014, and you can find me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram too. Just search for Otis Gyre. Until next week, stay spooky and get some sleep, if you can. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to Scary Stories Told in the Dark, a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcasts Network. Visit simplyscarypodcast.com today to learn more about our network and our other amazing storytelling programs. Tonight's program was hosted, and its featured stories performed by yours truly, Otis Gyre. Selected stories have been adapted with the kind permission of their respective authors. Original music provided by Luke Hodgkinson and Jesse Cornett. Sound design and final mixing and mastering provided by executive producer and director Craig Groshek. Program's artwork and logo by David Romero. If you're looking for some fresh tales on a daily basis while waiting for the next podcast, check out my YouTube channel, the Otis Gyre channel, and my extensive collection of narrated tales there. Simply search on YouTube by my name and you'll find me. And don't forget to subscribe and press the bell notification icon to get my latest releases. Got a scary tale of your own that you'd like performed? I take submissions. Email it to me today at otis@simplyscarypodcast.com to have your terrifying tome considered for production in a future episode of this show. That's OTIS@simplyscarypodcast.com.
If you've enjoyed what you heard on tonight's program and are joining us on your favorite podcast app, subscribe to us to be sure you never miss an episode and leave a 5-star review and a comment. Your feedback means a lot to me. You can also follow Chilling Tales for Dark Nights and yours truly on Facebook to connect anytime and get the latest updates on this and other programs and my channel. If you're listening on the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights YouTube channel, do us a favor and hit the subscribe button and the bell notification icon for CTFDN as well to get more spooky tales from me and the crew and another episode of this program each and every Wednesday. And don't forget to hit that thumbs up button to tell us how we're doing and leave a kind word or a request. And don't forget to visit us at chillingtalesfordarknights.com and consider supporting the team by becoming a patron. In addition to helping us out, you'll get exclusive access to our audio archive and ad-free downloads of all your favorite stories, including those you've heard on this program. As for me, I'll be back next Wednesday with more terrifying tales to keep you up all night. But that's all right. Who needs sleep anyway?
You can live out your MasterChef dreams when you find a professional on Angie to tackle your dream kitchen remodel. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.